The following podcast is a W2M Network original production. Visit W2Mnet.com for all of our other great podcasts, plus news, reviews, articles, and opinions from the worlds of wrestling, video games, football, and entertainment.
Wrestling to the Max, Monday Night Raw, review.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Wrestling to the Max's Raw review for July 24th, 2017. And of course, like always, we are brought to you by W2Mnet.com as well as 411Mania.com. That's right. Hey, and if you want to go find us anywhere else, make sure you go subscribe at Wrestling to the Max or the W2M Network, wherever you get your podcast from. Also, we got a YouTube channel. Just go search out Wrestling in the Max. Get it on YouTube. Subscribe there, and you'll get us every time we have an episode. Plus, hey, you'll also get an email, and that'll help you out. Maybe remember that we have an episode out there, or maybe something you didn't know about. And, of course, you know, just to give you guys a heads up, too, we have a Facebook group that also involves lots of wrestling discussions, and we like to kind of promote that, especially for the fact that you guys watch Monday Night Raw, SmackDown Live, and all these other great pay-per-views, and you got to have a place to sound off. Well, that's one great place to sound off, and not only that, get a lot of, you know, info on what other people think. Great place to go just to have a great community in the world of wrestling. Of course, I am Gary Vaughn, and along with me is our host, Paul Leeser.
Heyo.
And Paul, I mean, we've got a interesting Raw to talk about here. There's several things that are progressing here that I really kind of want to talk about and, you know, get excited about because we are heading closer to SummerSlam.
Absolutely. An incredibly, incredibly much better 3 hours than what we had to sit through on Sunday. But that's for another time. They open this episode of Raw with Kurt Angle coming out. He's talking about SummerSlam. He's talking about Jason Jordan. Basically, what this all boils down to is Samoa Joe, Roman Reigns, and Braun Strowman all want to fight Brock at SummerSlam. Kurt has enough of them interrupting him as they come out one by one and state their case, says, F it, it's all y'all against Brock. So we got a fatal four-way now for the Universal title at SummerSlam official, and later on they announce that next week Joe, Reigns, and Braun will all face off in a triple threat on Raw. So you have a lot of people come in try to do the whole pull apart bra thing. This one, I don't know. I love pull apart brawls. I thought this was cool. Watching Braun toss people around was fun. This could be a really good time, honestly.
Yeah, we talk about that for the most part usually when we get into this conversation about this fatal four way, and that's because of the fact that all four guys are very believable. All four have a reason to be involved in this match. There's not one of these guys you could really say is kind of a, well, they threw him in there because he's a name. Or they threw him in there because, really, they just had no other thing to do with him and they kind of wanted him in the main event picture. That's really not the case for any of these guys. Every one of them has a storyline that mixes in with this whole situation, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I love about it. I mean, honestly, everybody's point and why they should be a part of this match is common sense. So you heard them once again. They go through it every week, you know, talk about why they deserve to be a part of this. And you can't fault one of these guys for having, you know, to be in this match. So very happy with that. It makes a lot of sense. The pull-apart stuff here is maybe not as exciting, I think, as sometimes as you get with Brock Lesnar, but I still think it had something here. And I hate to always say that these things are great or good because, you know, people are saying, well, pull aparts are what sells you on something. They should just do that all the time. No, it's not the case. It's the fact that you have these high-profile guys, these large men.
Mm-hmm.
It makes sense to me, and it makes sense that you would have a monster like Braun Strowman and a guy like Samoa Joe and Roman Reigns be able to just to toss people around. So that was kind of the fun part about it. I think it had a lot of entertainment involved, and it's so, I guess in a way, so big fight feeling because of the fact that these guys are ready just to kill themselves and just to get to everybody else. They don't care how many people they have to face. They'll take the punishment. And that's exactly what they did here. And once again, Braun Strowman looking strong. I love it. I'm so excited. I love that little evil smile at the end there. That last shot that they had of Braun Strowman. It's just perfect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've been talking about this for a while now, since they started teasing this 2 or 3 weeks ago, since I guess really just since Great Balls of Fire. But you're right, everybody here has a reason, everybody's got history, everybody has beef. And I think most importantly, it's like you mentioned, all these guys, even Roman to a degree, feels triple tough and could legitimately tear off all these guys' heads whenever they wanted to. And they're just looking to fight each other because, you know, that's all who can, you know, you can hit them and they won't instantly die is pretty much, I think, the reasoning behind all this. So, this should be a really fun main event at SummerSlam. Hopefully they can keep the heat going for a while, because they still have a little less than a month before we get to SummerSlam. So,
yeah,
let's try not to burn this out too fast. That triple threat has me a little nervous.
Yeah, me too. And that's what I was going to say, is they're going to do little things here and there to kind of tease you about that big match. And I think that that could be either good or very bad, because they'll give away too much too early. And then when you get to SummerSlam, no one really cares.
Right.
And so hopefully they, like you're saying here, they pace themselves. They make wise decisions. You don't have to have these guys wrestle every Monday Night Raw, guys. Just to let you know that you can have them make appearances, talk, do a few things, but they also don't have to wrestle each other. They can prove their points against other guys. So that's something that I hope they look into. And like you said, this doesn't become something where we kind of see too much before we actually get to the big dance. I'm really happy about this. You know, and if they continue doing what they didn't like on this episode of Raw, no wasted breath. I don't think anything was wasted here. Nothing really thrown in just to kind of add some flavor. Mm-hmm. It doesn't need it. This is one of the better things, I think, on this show.
I agree with you entirely. I think there's a whole lot of good stuff rolling around on this. This is a very point-by-point Raw. It's all very dedicated to certain stories they have going on. Something we used to talk about SmackDown doing very well, and they still do. But it's nice to see that happening over here on the Red Show. Moving along here, let's go ahead and get this next little segment out of the way, because this was a really fun part. Elias Samson comes out, does his usual bit. He gets interrupted by Finn, who's still pissed off about getting a guitar broken over his face. He's still got a couple of the cuts showing off, all that good stuff. They're going to have themselves an ODQ match. They get a good ton of time to tell this, and I think they do a really good job. They go all the way to the finish here. Balor looks like he's got it all wrapped up. He hits coup de grace. But here comes Bray Wyatt out of the darkness. He hits Sister Abigail. Elias Samson crawls over, gets the win. I get it, right? I mean, Finn Balor and Bray Wyatt going into SummerSlam, if they can, like, they need to turn up the mystique on this a whole lot. That's what I'm waiting for, right? And I know people really aren't into Wyatt. I'm not super into Wyatt, but I always find him the most interesting when he's doing all the supernatural, creepy stuff, and he's got a perfect foil for that now, and we'll see what they do with Elias going forward, because this is kind of a big win for him, but the end of the line here is that you're going to get Finn and Bray at SummerSlam pretty much, even though I don't think it's officially been announced yet.
Yeah, I think the writing's on the wall for that to happen. Mm-hmm. I think the big thing for me here is you walk away feeling very good about Elias Samson. Once again, proving us that he can do the job. If you would have told me a long time ago that Elias Samson would be in this spot and he would be doing this well, I'm not saying he's great, but I'm saying for his young career and at this point, he's doing really good. And I think he's really proven, I think Vince Wright and a lot of other people write that, man, he honestly showing that he belongs on Monday Night Raw. So I'm very happy with Elias Samson at this point from where he is. This whole Bray Wyatt situation and, of course, Finn Balor, I'm right there with you. I say it week in and week out. I want that mystique of Bray Wyatt to be so much more stronger. It used to mean something. They got to where they hokied it out. Mm-hmm. To really doesn't mean as much, but I think there's a way to work your way back, and I think they're kind of doing it a little bit, baby steps for them. And, you know, you're right. The perfect foil is Finn Balor because of the whole demon stuff, and they could have that flare up, and I love mm-hmm. that. And I hope they find some new avenues we have not seen to have that happen. I really do, by the time we get to SummerSlam, want to see the, I guess he calls himself the God or whatever he calls himself, Bray Wyatt, versus the demon. I want to see it, right? Mm-hmm. But I want to feel like I'm watching that match and not coming to this saying Wyatt versus Balor. That's not what I want. I want the mystique to be turned up a notch to where I'm not even thinking about their names. I'm thinking about their personas. And that's what makes that match special. If they can do it.
Yeah, and they have the time to do it. This is really all we get from those guys on this. Like I said, this is a really point-by-point Raw here. But the opportunity is there, for sure. And whether it is a god versus a demon or they work this into something else, I'm interested by the idea. They just have to execute well.
Yeah, and it's going to be difficult. Well, you know, this is not going to be something that's going to happen overnight. Mm-hmm. We're going to have to hopefully accept some things, and at the same point, they're going to hopefully make their product a little bit better when it comes to working with Bray Wyatt and having things go a little bit different than, you know, predictable. Because that's what they've been with Bray Wyatt for too long. It's kind of why he's kind of fallen out of grace with a lot of people. So
right. Jumping on to the other main event feud going on this show. Of course, Dean Ambrose and Seth Rollins are going to be in a handicap match against the Miz-Daraj. Before we get to the match, though, they meet backstage. Rollins is excited. He's ready to team with Dean again for the first time in 3 years, which it doesn't really feel like it was that long ago. But here we are. Ambrose, you know, isn't really into trusting Seth yet. He's still not there. Rollins says, you know, we have to worry about three guys. We can't win this if you're worrying about me. And pretty much that's what Ambrose says, right? You know, you have to worry about three guys. I'm worrying about four. And then Ambrose walks off, which gets us to our main event of the evening. I actually really enjoyed this. I thought this was really good paced. I think Curtis Axel and Bo Dallas both looked really good here, even though they got their tails kicked pretty hard at the end. And somehow, some way, Dean and Seth managed to overcome the odds. A quick save by Seth from a skull-crushing finale, and a big knee leads to Dean hitting the Dirty Deeds on Miz to get the victory. I thought this was really, really fun. I didn't hate this at all. I don't know exactly where you go from here, but I am intrigued a little bit more than I was last week.
Yeah, and you know what's cool about this is they have those behind-the-scenes segments where you kind of are built up to this match. Mm-hmm. And I feel like they're very important for the fact that we kind of understand that there is more than just the match itself. And you get a chance to see what these guys are thinking, you know, with Miz talking to Curtis and Bo, you know, kind of, you know, talking about some of their, you know, situations and why they're doing what they're doing and all that. And I love also the Maurice talking about Hollywood and all that. It just really fit. It kind of built to what we were going to see later. And then when you have Ambrose and Rollins having their discussion, and as you see that Ambrose is still unsure of what's going on with Rollins and if he's being truthful, it's if he's really on his side. It just adds so much more to this, and I love that. And, mm-hmm. you know, a good match. I think a really solid match here. Lots of fun to watch. I think it was pretty darn entertaining from my point of view. And when you get the end here, you know, it was just that exciting crescendo. I don't mm-hmm. know about you, mm-hmm. but that ending where, you know, you had Seth Rollins diving, and then you had, of course, that big, fast, quick DDT from Ambrose. I mean, to me, it was like a great crescendo to kind of get you to the end of the match. And then post-match, you get a little bit more flavor because now you get, what, Seth Rollins looking for that whole shield fist, you know, thing. And mm-hmm. Ambrose ignoring it, moving on, and just kind of acting like, no, I still don't trust you. I love it. It's because otherwise, Paul, we're talking about some of the same things we've talked about when it comes to Ambrose and Miz and all that other stuff where we kind of say, boring. Mm-hmm. This is stupid. Right now, they're actually giving us something interesting because it's not all about Ambrose versus Miz or Seth versus Miz. It's about Miz versus two guys who are kind of facing each other in a way.
Right. It's sort of evolved now to a point, which is something WWE stories don't always do, especially when they get dragged out forever. So this one, they stuck Seth in, which, you know, I think if you go back and listen to our past episodes, me and Gary weren't exactly sold on because Seth was coming in pretty flat. They add in the Miz-Daraj, and now you have some fresh faces bouncing around, and can I trust you to beat these guys over here is really interesting for Dean, because this is obviously, I think him and Seth Rollins probably might still be their best feud in the WWE for both guys, honestly. And like that, the Shield had so much history and so much meaning, and you know, for all that to just explode the way it did, and to be here now and in the future, three some years later, Dean still can't trust him. Like, that is great long-term storytelling. I'm expecting a triple threat out of this, honestly, for the IC title at SummerSlam, though, Dean, Seth, and Miz. I think that works, because Dean doesn't trust Seth, and Seth wants to win over Dean, and, you know, trying to prove all that going into a match where you can't exactly do that, I think is a great opportunity to maybe turn Dean heel out of all of this if they want to.
No, I'm right there with you, and I think this is, like you said, a great launching point if they want to do it that way. I think the triple threat is also a great match on paper. I mean, I think it's something that looks really good. I think people are really interested in seeing that. Even if they haven't really, let's be honest, watched Raw lately, they can see that on a poster and be like, oh, wow, okay, I'm going to check this out. What's this all about? I mean, all that surrounds that looks very good. And I think for the most part, you know, like you said, Seth Rollins came in very flat. I think even Ambrose, to an extent, was just not really doing much and not really exciting you, you know. So I think we could sit here today, Paul, and just be happy that they're giving us something that we care about. Beforehand, they were just giving us stuff we just honestly didn't care about, and we wanted to move on past what they were doing, you know. So hey, that's positive. Let's hope they keep it up. That's what I want. Got to keep it up, though.
Absolutely. Got to keep it up. Keep on pushing forward. All that good stuff. Jason Jordan, of course, is going to have his first match on this episode of Raw. They talk about him a lot. Jordan has an interview with Renee Young where he talks about how he's looked up to Kurt his entire life, and it turns out that it was his dad. You know, it's like the biggest dream come true, and he's really focused on winning tonight. He's got Kurt Hawkins. He squashes him pretty much. He's going to be on Miz TV next week. I enjoyed the promo. I thought it was some of his better work that I've ever seen. He seems into this whole thing, willing to commit to the character, all that good stuff. I'm into this right now.
I am too, to an extent. I think it has some legs. It's so weird, though. I still feel very awkward about it. And I don't know what it is about it, but it's just a little awkward. And it has nothing to do with really believability. Part of it, I guess, could be, but really not really. I mean, I think that really he could be matched up with a young Kurt Angle. I think that, you know, they have some of those same stylisms, and really he can kind of feed off of that. It's just the fact that I think that his personality is something I'm getting used to, and I'm not sold that I love Jason Jordan yet. I think he's fine, and I loved him as a tag team partner, but as a single star, it's still something I'm wrapping my head around. I thought he did fine tonight. Of course, you know, it's not hard when you got number one jobber in WWE to face, but it is what it is, right? And they got what they needed out of this. I'm really excited about the future. Though, more than what happened on this Raw, I kind of want to see what we get with the relationship between Kurt Angle and Jason Jordan. How are they going to continue reacting? Are they going to work as an evil team? Are they going to work as, you know, Kurt's always putting roadblocks in front of him to make him prove himself? Those are the dynamics that I like about this, because it's a storyline that you can go in multiple directions. And it maybe it'll get better. But right now, as we said, I'm a little awkward about it. I'm still unsure. I think I'll get over that eventually, though.
Yeah, I think that's why I'm so interested, is there's just so many possibilities. Is Kurt going to keep making Jason prove himself and just escalating matches? Is Jason going to turn out to be sort of the demon kid from hell where he's ruining Kurt Angle's name? Yeah, there's just so many different ways to go. It looks like they're going to go the good guy route for now, though. I wouldn't be surprised if we see Jason Jordan with the Intercontinental title somewhere down the road this year.
Wow, that's a pretty big deal, yeah. I think. I mean, because, you know, from him coming from really not a whole lot. I mean, yes, he did win Tag Team Gold on SmackDown Live. Outside of that, hasn't really done a lot. But that's okay. I mean, sometimes you need that, and sometimes like I always say, that the title is what makes you who you are if you don't have a lot of other, you know, salt and pepper on you. So I think that'd be a good thing. I wouldn't be against it. And also, once again, the other options you have of people being jealous and saying, hey, Kurt, you gave him the IC title.
Yeah. Yeah, especially if it's still The Miz working down the road. What a great feud to get Jason going, who you know, has not only odds to overcome if the Miz-Daraj is still around when we get to that point, but of course, the Miz being the Miz, I think that could be really great for him. Flip side of the mid-card coin this week is Enzo and Big Show's deal with Big Cass. Enzo comes out once, or first he meets with Big Show backstage. He's got a new plan. He's ready to bring the fight to Big Cass. He comes out. He does the same promo we've heard since the turn, essentially, which leads us into the match where Big Cass once again squashes Enzo about 4 minutes or so. After the match, Big Show shows up to save Enzo from a beating and ends up getting in a little bit of a brawl, which the Big Show stands tall from. So I don't know if we got a lot of new stuff here this week, but enough here to let you know that maybe we're finally moving past Enzo just getting his tail kicked, and it's finally going to be Big Show and Big Cass coming to terms.
And that's fine. That's what we got to have. But it just doesn't do a lot for me. Right now, as I sit here, I think to myself, okay, was this the worst part of Raw? It might have been. It's not that I don't like Big Show or Big Cass or Enzo or any of these guys involved. It's just that I don't know that I'm loving this. I think they've kind of tried to make it bigger than it really is. Mm-hmm. There's something about here that lacks some substance. I don't know. Maybe I can't even put my finger on it. I just don't care for it all that much. I'm kind of done with it. And Enzo can only come out so many times and do his thing. I mean, heck, I felt bad for him tonight because Enzo kind of started to do his little chicken, whatever he does or whatever that dance is. And, you know, the crowd is supposed to have that song, you know, the Enzo Amore. And they didn't even do it. I mean, they were hot for a lot of other things on this show. They weren't hot for Enzo. And I felt bad for him. And that kind of concerned me a little bit. And I think that says a lot for this. I don't know if people really are invested in what's happening here. I don't think this feud between Enzo Amore and Kaz is as big as I think maybe the guys backstage a lot it could be. And even Big Show, I don't think, can save it.
You know, I mean, Enzo has been a complete non-factor match-wise in this, right? He comes out, he's got the passion-filled promos, talking about how he's the little engine that could, how he's going to find a way to finally overcome Big Cass, and he just gets the crap beaten out of him for 3 minutes at a time, which is fine, but if you're trying to salvage Enzo out of any of this, having him get beat around all the time by Cass isn't going to help him any. And if you're trying to move that over to Big Show, like now there's all the momentum is essentially with Cass, except for the few moments where Big Show's just showed up and sort of shoved him around. So I don't know what there really is to latch onto here right now, to your point.
Yeah. I think that's the deal, though. And maybe this isn't supposed to be the biggest part of Raw. Maybe this is just something they're trying to get done so they can finalize the split. They can have a big match at SummerSlam between Big Cass and Big Show. And then that's all they want. They want to kind of continue on with it, and that's okay. Yes, I get all that, but I just kind of feel bad. I really want Enzo to at least have some love somewhere, and I think right now, as we sit, he's kind of getting crippled because of the fact that this is just not going over as well as I think they wanted to or I wanted to go. So, I mean, to me, it's almost like, you know, you used to love this hamburger at this restaurant, and then you go to buy the hamburger, and you realize they've kind of changed the ingredients, and now the only reason you go now is because of the French fries. And that's really – is that big enough a reason to come? Not really.
Yeah.
So and that's part of this feud to me. I just don't know if adding Big Show is going to be enough for me to really care about this match with Big Bad. So I don't know. I want to be happy because I like the guys involved, but it's just not working for me.
Right, yeah. And that's completely fair. Like I said, I don't think they've really given you a big reason to latch on to this because Enzo is just a non-factor, and that's half the equation so far. So,
yeah.
Let's go ahead and talk about the cruiserweights some here. We get a video package of Daivari injuring Tozawa's shoulder and that whole drama that's been going on between those two, as well as Tozawa and Titus O'Neil. Tozawa comes out to the ring. He calls out Daivari. However, it's Neville who arrives and shows up and starts talking, you know, some smack to him, taking credit for the injury initially, saying that Tozawa has been led astray by false promises, saying that Tozawa isn't even who he used to be a couple of years ago. And this finally sends Tozawa over the edge, attacks, beats on Neville, hits the big senton, goes to favor his shoulder. Neville's been taken care of, but here comes Daivari. He locks in his hammerlock thing on both Neville and Tozawa, and ends up standing tall out of all this. I thought this was fine. I think, you know, we'll probably see a number one contenders match here between Tozawa and Daivari, as Larry is saying over on his Raw report too, tomorrow on 205 Live. But, you know, I'm still kind of into this, right? I mean, Tozawa is an insanely interesting figure to me. The injury, they're building up more obstacles for him to overcome if he can overcome them. So I'm okay right now with all this going on for the Cruiserweights.
I love your reaction, because my reaction is going to be a little bit different, a little bit more extreme, if I can say it that way. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to spell it out for you, because I love this L-O-V-E. I really do. This at the beginning, I wasn't sure I was sold on, especially with, you know, the Titus brand being involved and all that. I really care now, and I am super invested now in watching Tozawa and his interaction with Titus, and the fact that Titus is being actually smart, and it's not about him being goofy or being a crook or anything else. It's about him being honest with his client, who doesn't care because of his passion. Mm-hmm. And I think that is so awesome. They really do a great job with that. Maybe I'm just overselling it. Maybe I'm just the one guy who's digging something that everybody else is kind of like, eh, whatever. But I just really appreciate that detail. Mm-hmm. And I also like what we got in the ring, because you got a passionate Tozawa who just wants to get in there and beat the crap out of this guy, who has really tortured him and just really screwed up his shoulder. Daivari has been just a pain in him, you know. So I think that is something fun. You bring out Neville. Neville makes a lot of great points. Neville's one of the best guys in the Cruiserweight division. So have him come out, and then Daivari. And Daivari is the one that ended up standing tall. It just all worked. I loved it, and I think it makes sense. And you got Tozawa now, you know, even hurting more because he didn't listen to his manager. And so there's all these different components to something that is on 205 Live. You know, I say it every week, you know, they're trying to give you reasons to watch that show. And if you're not wanting to watch it, you just really don't care about these guys. And I watched this, and I'm honestly excited about 205. And sometimes I'm kind of, I'll watch 205. I actually been really ready to have 205 on my TV, because I think this is a compelling story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm with you. I'm interested in Neville. I have been, really, I think, since before he won the title this year with Swan. Tozawa, I think, has been incredible his entire run here. Got himself over pretty quickly with just a ha chant and what he brought to the ring, as well as, you know, his pedigree and everything that preceded him before he got here. And these two have they've told one heck of a story so far. They just keep adding odds for Tozawa to overcome. And if he is the one to finally, you know, bump Neville off, then I think you got yourself a great babyface to run the show for a while, whether you want to keep him around Neville or if you want to bring up some of these other heels you've had come up on that show. I think you're in good hands either way.
Yeah, exactly. And what a way to put over Daivari.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, my God, to take out Neville, the guy in the Cruiserweight division, and to look as strong as he did, that we're talking about building, and they are building a great heel right there. I think Daivari is one of those guys that I've been paying attention to. I'm as interested in him as I am as Mustafa Ali. Mm-hmm. I really am. And I think those are some guys to really, really pay attention to. So glad on Raw that they gave him an opportunity to come out of this looking really strong. Good stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Women's division-wise, first up you have Emma interrupt an interview that Renee is having with Kurt Angle about Jason Jordan's debut. She wants to know when the focus is going to be on her, when she's going to get her chance to get noticed, since she takes credit for starting the Women's Revolution down on NXT, and she's, you know, making really strong points here. And Kurt says, well, you know what? You can have a match with Nia, and maybe that'll get you some attention. It is the wrong kind of attention, because Nia just squashes her in about a minute and a half. And, man, this is... It doesn't look good for Emma, really, going forward, because she's got nothing going on. Maybe you send her to the Blue Brand. I don't know. Let's go and do that first, yeah.
Yeah, you're right. And I think Blue Brand's probably the better way to go. And it's just because of the fact that it just does not seem like they care on Raw. It just doesn't seem like they have any fit for her. And I think at one point they did. At one point they had some ideas, and I think they had probably maybe her winning the title. I don't know. But the one thing I know now is with all the injuries and the reasons that she's been off of TV has really created a problem. I think they've kind of forgotten about her. And now with her back, I just don't think that they care anymore. I think that that toy that once was shiny has kind of left that new shine, and now they're just kind of like just another face. And so I think a change of scenery would do a lot of favors. I really do. I think if not, I have some fear. They may, you know, kind of look at her as someone's just going to be another, you know, person to kind of keep around just to beat up on, or maybe let her go. And I don't know which one, but I really am hoping that they do make a decision, like, you know, send her to the Blue Brand just to give her some fresh legs and a new scenery.
Yeah, I mean, let's at least try everything we can before you talk about Red Singer, because she is one of the ones that I think got a lot of people paying attention to what was going on with the women in NXT. And you know, injuries obviously have plagued her for a while, and the whole Emelina thing didn't really work out for her either. I think that was a huge step back, and trying to rebuild everything that you had from a couple years ago now, it's proving really difficult, and it doesn't help that you don't have a whole lot of steam behind you from the WWE or the fans, really, in that matter, either, because they don't have a reason to, you know.
Exactly, and I think it's super great talent. I think she's got a lot to offer. It's just, you know, once again, not utilizing her in the right ways really caused her issues, and also caused probably, you know, some other, you know, thought processes backstage to where they think that she can be, when I think we kind of know that she can do a lot better.
Absolutely. Alexa Bliss has a promo backstage talking about how she's really looking forward to watching Sasha and Bayley tear each other apart to face her at SummerSlam so she can pick up the pieces. You have another segment later on where Banks and Bayley promise to tear the house down and that the best woman's going to win. And that finally leads us to the match where Alexa Bliss is on commentary. This gets a good chunk of time, too, somewhere around the 12-minute neighborhood. Real big back-and-forth match. I enjoyed this a whole lot. The crowd was really invested in both, which was super helpful. I think this made Bayley look really good. And Bayley ends up coming out with the win. Sasha misses the frog splash. Bayley ends up cradling Banks afterwards, and she gets the victory, so she will face Alexa Bliss at SummerSlam for that championship. I thought this was really, really good. Maybe my favorite part of the show.
Yeah, I mean, it was really exciting, and, you know, I am, to be honest with you, a little shocked at how much this crowd got behind this division. It's been a little while since we've seen any city really just really get pumped up and behind them, and I think this is a super positive thing. Really excited for them, because I think that they were able to give more in this match because people were behind them. I think sometimes they come out there and the crowd's a little flat. I'm sure it does affect their psyche and what they're trying to do, and you know, how they're kind of coming across, especially if they're feeding off the crowd. So I think that helped things here. And you're right. I think that Bayley's someone who needs to get those victories and to look strong. And I think they gave her a great chance here. I think for the most part, we're still kind of in that waiting game. Of how much, you know, to really look forward to coming up here with this division. But I think it's a really good deal. And from what they're doing, I think they're setting themselves up in a little bit more stronger light than I thought they were. But let's see if it continues that way. You know, it could be up this week and down next week. Who knows? But I'm happy what we saw tonight.
Yeah, and I mean, I think you give people a match like Sasha Banks and Bayley going one-on-one, people who have been watching NXT are just going to be into that because they know the history there, right? And they have all that working for them. And, I mean, really, it was just nice to, like, it seemed like the casuals were really behind Bayley in this, too, which was nice to see that maybe all that goodwill that she did build up hasn't gone away completely, obviously, even though it's nowhere near what it used to be.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, I think what's great is that you do know that, you know, there is passion behind what they're doing and the fact that they all do care. You can tell that. You know, it doesn't come across like they're just kind of going through the motions. I really feel like week in and week out they're trying to give us something special, even if the crowd's not behind it. And I think, you know, if they continue on that path, they are going to do some special things. And I'm ready. I do want to see Bayley and Sasha Banks get back in the ring and, you know, compete and pull off something that they, you know, did, was it 2-3 years ago now? I don't even know how long ago is it. But it seems like a little bit far away now, but I think they can recreate something super special.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with you entirely. They just got to be given that chance. So, I think the last thing we have to talk about here is the tag team division. The Revival come out to the ring for a promo. They end up sending Charlie, who was going to interview him, away and talk about how they dominated NXT, how great they are. They beat the Hardys. They've done all these great things. And then here comes Anderson and Gallows. They said that they did everything the Revival did. They just did it first, and that makes them better. So we have ourselves a nice little tag match here. Quick little 8-minute affair. Not overly interesting, in my opinion, but you do have the Hardys come out, ends up distracting, maybe it doesn't really distract them, I don't know. They come out, the Revival and Anderson and Gallus do another brawl, Shatter Machine wins it for the Revival, and then after the bell rings, the Hardys come in, clear out the Revival. This is looking like Fatal 4-Way territory here too, Gary.
Oh, boy. How many can we have?
Yeah.
Oh, boy. I mean, this could be the case. I was kind of excited about this matchup just on this show because I kind of feel like both these teams are kind of vicious and they have that style of being kind of similar, but not completely. I think their look is the more similar thing more than anything else. But I think for the most part, we got something that was kind of fun. I like watching both these tag teams in the ring and just to see how they can match each other. I think the introduction of the Hardys, to come and kind of interfere just by showing up on the stage is kind of, an interesting thing to be a part of this. And I think it goes back to what you were talking about, Fatal 4-Way. So I'm kind of curious how they are going to make us care about this even more. I think it's good. You do have the Hardys trying to get at their one-ups on their Revival and get back at them for what they did to them. Mm-hmm. But outside of that, I don't know. I don't know that it's super strong. As much as I like all these tag teams, all three of those tag teams we were just talking about, I'm a fan of. I really like all of them. I don't have any complaints against any of them. But I don't know how invested I am in, really. I just don't know. And is a Fatal 4-Way really great for the tag division? I'm not sold on that either.
Mm-hmm. I think you're onto something there, too. I don't know if I'm exactly sold on a Fatal 4-Way being the best idea here, but it is something they like to do on these big shows with all the tag teams to get them on there. This could end up being the Revival against Sheamus and Cesaro, because the Revival is the one who has been booked the strongest, I think, in all of this outside of the champs. I think Cesaro and Sheamus could be able to swing both ways, but I'm not real sure what we're going for here, because it still feels like, obviously the Revivals are heel, it feels like Anderson and Gallus are toeing the line here a little bit, and then, you have the Hardys and Sheamus and Cesaro who are already so established, and that's your entire division. It's flat, and I think that's what's making this really hard to try to dive into.
Yeah, you just said it right there. I mean, I really don't have to say a whole lot more. I mean, it's like you said, it's the whole division. It's just not a lot going, and it's hard because I think me and you kind of would probably agree on the fact that all these tag teams have had something special that we cared about and have something in the future that I think we look forward to. It's just that the chemistry right now is not exactly there. The storytelling, some of the other things that are going to make us really love the tag division are just not around, and hopefully they become not absent, but they become something where they matter and it shows up and we're all happy about that. So I will hold my judgment until we get further in the storyline on, what I really feel about the tag division, but right now I'm not sure.
Yeah, I'm not real sure either, but I do love a lot of these teams just individually. The booking hasn't been strong, but they have a month to fix that, like I've said multiple times on this show. So that covers this Raw for us. So, Gary, we got to put a number on this bad boy. What you going to give it?
I talked about a few negative things, but I think overall we had a lot more positives. Mm-hmm. And I think they kind of came out strong on this episode. And maybe after they saw that Battleground pay-per-view, they said, God, we got to find something that keeps our fans around. So, and that's a positive. Hey, if you can make Monday Night Raw entertaining and won't make me want to watch it all 3 hours, mm-hmm. I'll take it. I'll take it for sure. You know, I'm not going to go an 8. I really probably should, because sometimes I give a very, you know, maybe a below average Raw, sometimes a 7. But, you know, I just don't know. I think an 8 or a 9 is kind of like, man, you blew me out of the water. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if they blew me out of the water. I'm going to go 7.5. I think I'm going to give them a little bit more for what they did. I think there's still some things that I'm not really sold on, some things that maybe I'm just kind of, So I just think a 7.5 is fair for me.
There is a lot of quality wrestling on this show, which I cannot understate enough how much that helps 3 hours fly by. The no DQ match is good. The number one contenders match between Bayley and Sasha Banks is really good, as is the main event. And that's almost, 45 minutes to 50 minutes of quality wrestling right there, which is very nice to have. Everything else is all very story-oriented. It's all pointing you towards a direction, which is, of course, towards SummerSlam, into the future for the cruiserweights and all that good stuff, too. So, I don't know about 7.5. I am willing to go 7, though. This is a very, very rock-solid episode of Raw, and one that I wouldn't mind recommending to people to actually tune into if you're choosy about your wrestling time this during the week.
Yeah, very true. I mean, it's definitely a show that you would want to tune into if you're just kind of like, I don't know, you know, I haven't watched Raw in a long time. I just, mm-hmm. you know, but this is one you can actually tune into and feel like you didn't waste your time.
Exactly.
So, but yeah, there you go. That is Monday Night Raw for us for this week. We appreciate everybody who came and checked this out tonight. We always have a lot of fun here. We're excited about some of the things we'll be doing. Of course, we'll be doing episode 257, part one tonight of Wrestling to the Max. We'll be doing a lot of great discussions about some of the biggest news in the world of wrestling. Plus, we'll also be talking some Ring of Honor. Yeah, some great stuff on that show. Also, don't forget to go check out all our other great review shows we've been doing. And of course, that we'll continue to do, like SmackDown Live, 205 Live, and of course NXT. We'll be doing that also this week. All the great content that we have is coming to you via the W2Mnet.com, as well as, you know, through the podcasting places that you go find all of them, like, you know, Apple Podcast or maybe even Spreaker. Make sure you go search out Wrestling to the Max or the W2M Network, as well as don't forget about YouTube and our channel over there. Just search out Wrestling to the Max. Besides that, guys, once again, thank you so much for joining us. I am Gary Vaughn. He is Paul Leeser, and we will catch you guys down the road.
Have a good one, guys.
The following podcast is a W2M Network original production. Visit W2Mnet.com for all of our other great podcasts, plus news, reviews, articles, and opinions from the worlds of wrestling, video games, football, and entertainment.